Well, thank you. Thank you very much for having me down here. And thank you to Christine for the invitation. My apologies again for not being here for more of the session. At the least because it would mean that I'd be able to... I don't know how well placed this work is as a last presentation, and I just sort of regret not hearing more of what has been discussed over the course of the day. So in terms of what I'm going to present on is some recent research I undertook at my university, UTS. And the project, I looked at the mapping of Indigenous studies content across the university. And the reason for this mapping exercise, because we're working up really to a point where we can have a graduate attribute at the program level, as Christine, and I'm sure you're all familiar with this, you know, at the course intended learning outcome level. So in the degree I teach into the Bachelor of Communications, there is a Indigenous specific like course intended learning outcome, but we're hoping to develop up a graduate attribute, or I don't know if it'll be called that, or a cultural competency framework to drive content across the university. So the point of doing this mapping exercise was to identify where material exists, who's doing it, why they're doing it, whether they're doing it well or not, and in effect gather some case studies together and maybe have those people in the various faculties who may well go on to champion the cause of this kind of new approach that we're advocating in terms of greater Aboriginal related content in the curriculum. In doing that research, there were three stages to the research. The first was an audit of all of the subject descriptions and the basic information that's available publicly on every subject at UTS. So we had a heap of search terms, like obviously Aboriginal, Indigenous, Koori, Murray, etc. Mabo, we put in some, Terry Jenke's work. So we came up with some lead authors' work that we thought might be cited. Some really interesting data emerged. I don't know why that's kind of gone out of whack. But you can see there a fairly predictable outcome. And again, what we found in those subject descriptions, that's not going to be reflective that of all possible content, because what's available in those stripped back subject outlines is no indication really, or is of little indication of what takes place on a weekly basis in class. But at the least, in the Faculty of Arts and Social Sciences, almost out of the 159 subjects, undergrad and postgrad, something 46% were in Faculty of Arts and Social Sciences. So that includes education, school and adult education, communications program, international studies, global studies. I think that's it. And you can see there, law 13%, business 16%, design, architecture and building 6%, engineering and information technology 0%, health 14%, and science 4%. And taking out the postgrad, that came down to 130 subjects, so you can see there, that brought the arts and social sciences up to more than 50%, and health 15%, and business 16%. So the business faculty, that high percentage there reflects a block mode program, Aboriginal specific block mode program. So the second part of the research was to distribute a survey where we asked all of our colleagues to I'm just going to look back to my notes now because I'm just realising I'm not remembering all that I said I would say. So the second part was a survey, and it was distributed to the deans, associate deans, teaching and learning, to then distribute to staff, and we also put it out on staff notices. And staff were asked to describe how, where they included Aboriginal studies content, material, perspective. So we just kept it as broad as possible rather than try and prescribe, you know, what Aboriginal studies, you know, is. And so we were saying content, material, we were just trying, you know, as I said, just trying to keep the possibility of the, open up the responses to make that as wide as possible. And what you can see here, the survey respondents highlighted the importance of first-hand exposure to Indigenous perspectives and experiences as guest lectures by Aboriginal academics or professional slash community experts and other similar experiences through field trips and placements. Survey participants nominated the activities that best reflected Indigenous-related content, perspectives or material in their teaching in the following ways. So you can see there, set readings resources, 75% of respondents said yes to this. And following on from there, you can see relevant examples in lectures and tutorials. There are also case studies, guest lectures and web-based material and so on. In terms of student placements also featured relatively as, you know, nearly 11%. The other category reflected examples from the media. What else were there? Oh, yeah, newspaper clippings, film screenings, case study debates and life experiences. So that's what staff nominated as reflecting the Indigenous studies material, content or perspectives in their teaching. So after the... So we had the audit, the survey, and the third part was in-depth interviews. So I conducted 32 interviews with colleagues who had completed the survey. So these are self-nominating, I guess, and generally speaking, people who are already engaged and or keen to be more engaged. In terms of the surveys, there was only one respondent who thought that who said the following. Let me just who argued that in contrast to all survey and interview participants, one respondent viewed Indigenous content as not relevant to my subject material. And the inclusion of Indigenous-related content, I quote, lip service to political correctness at the expense of content that contributes to the course aims. So this particular respondent argued, if students want Indigenous content, they should take an Indigenous studies class. But this was, I mean, I was really grateful for that response because...
Gives you something to
do. Because it was just in such contrast to how everyone else spoke about how they thought about what they were doing, and this is really what I want to turn to now. In terms of the analysis of those interviews, as many of you know, they're really so much fun to when you're in the middle of doing the interviews, but then when you're left at the end of it with like a couple of hundred pages of transcribed interviews, you think, my God, what sense am I going to make of this? But, you know, it took a long time, actually, a lot of sort of thinking about it to make sense of what colleagues were saying. And there were three really leading themes that emerged. But I have classified them as professional practice, pedagogy, and advancing disciplinary knowledge. So in terms of advancing disciplinary knowledge, what colleagues were talking about was that Aboriginal studies or perspectives that mostly with this is not Aboriginal studies subjects or mandated, you know, subjects like what would be mandated by the in teacher education, for example. So I'm talking about subjects in law, in building, in health. So these are subjects with big cohorts of students, like maybe even 1,000 students, with, you know, many, they don't even have tutorials, actually, they have sort of plenaries. And so big subjects where a lot of, you know, that's big numbers being exposed to Aboriginal material, if you like. And what colleagues put forward there was that they viewed Aboriginal studies perspectives and material as critically intersecting disciplinary knowledge. How they understood the inclusion of Indigenous material in the majority of interviews, they were saying that critically intersecting disciplinary knowledge. So they were suggesting that Aboriginal perspectives variously functions to decolonise knowledge, as anti-colonial critique, to contest historical narratives that underpin disciplinary traditions, as offering theoretical critique and material which engages the politics of knowledge production. The inclusion of Indigenous material, perspectives and resources, and the disciplinary intersection this offered was also seen in the context of social change as generating new knowledge to improve social conditions for Aboriginal people. All right, so in terms of pedagogy, one really interesting distinction emerged, actually. In interviewing Aboriginal academics, what Aboriginal academics highlighted was significance. What they highlighted, and this was without in each separate interview, with five of my Aboriginal colleagues, they highlighted the issues of safety in the classroom, of careful consideration and inclusion of resources, of taking care to make sure students felt safe, of selecting material that wasn't confronting to students, of building respectful relationships in the classroom. And this was I think many of us it's probably not a big surprise, but it's a surprise when you compare when the interviews stacked up against one another to see these really different narratives, if you like, about approaches to teaching. It wasn't just Aboriginal academics who were very interested in the how of teaching. Non-Aboriginal academics were also concerned for safety in the classroom, and certainly for being concerned to ensure that in those big classes, students didn't assume an us and a them, so they didn't assume the absence of the presence of Aboriginal students. So I thought that was a really interesting thing as well. So it was just really interesting to see that other Aboriginal academics were really mindful of creating a safe learning environment, of creating the right conditions for constructive dialogue, and safety was a key word that all of those academics raised. And yet safety, I'm not saying this is a criticism of anybody, but it was just that issue of safety wasn't as prominent amongst non-Aboriginal academics. But several non-Indigenous academics highlighted their unease. So they talked about their own kind of anxiety in relation to their speaking position or speaking knowledgeably about Indigenous material perspectives. And I think they spoke about this perceived contest in two ways. One was in relation to their speaking position, as I said, and secondly, in relation to how they perceive the students' interest in authenticity of experience and perspective. So I'm not talking about authenticity in terms of identity, but what non-Aboriginal academics highlighted was this idea of that students, when it came to Indigenous-related material, they wanted to hear it from they wanted to be assured that there was some genuine source, that it had a genuine base to it. They were less inclined to, this is in the views of the academics I interviewed, less inclined to want to engage in a academic analysis, and they wanted to have affect. They wanted to feel a genuine kind of connection and shift or transformation as they dealt with particular material. And what many academics identified was that they achieved this sense of authenticity or a greater sense of confidence in speaking about the material when they referred to their own professional practice. So when they were able to draw on their own professional practice as a lawyer, as a medical in medical practice, as working as on a for in relation to, this is in the design, architecture and building area, as native title advocates throughout in Australia and throughout PNG. And that was a really interesting point, and that's really one of the key themes that I would like to highlight, is that the majority of research participants highlighted the link between their professional practice or industry experience and curriculum design. This was particularly highlighted in terms of being able to draw on professional practice experiences as examples in lectures and tutorials. So if we go back to that, to the responses to the surveys where colleagues identified the usefulness of using examples of their own of in tutorials and lectures, what came out in the interviews is those examples largely drew on their own professional practice. And for a university like UTS, where the teaching and learning model is practice oriented, so even in our communications program there's a capstone subject where students undertake actually two of their subjects are in the field, if you like, so they're working with a community organisation developing up a research project. Even in the engineering program there's a full year of industry experience, so that's very much the kind of identity of UTS. And so if we're seeing that also in terms of the recruitment of academics with that lengthy professional practice, and that is comes to the fore in terms of, or at least in this research, in terms of academic staff, how that informs their curriculum, how it informs what they teach in class. All right, so this was academic staff observed that students particularly appreciated the real-life examples of both highlighting the relevance of their future career, and as these examples provided an authentic access point to Aboriginal experience. So in this, authentic referred to the difference between book knowledge and experience. But I think the wider story that emerges here is being able to confidently and authoritatively provide students with real-life accounts. So this, using examples from professional practice, modelled how students could make the link between disciplinary knowledge and their future career. Barriers to including Indigenous perspectives and materials, all of the interview participants variously highlighted interest, passion and commitment of individual lecturer, the professional experience and research area. A few academics highlighted that even in a subject like property law, where you would think, you know, there's clearly a link in terms of the Indigenous content there, that once they were no longer coordinating that subject, there is no guarantee that Indigenous material or content will continue to be included. So content in many of the examples came down to the interest of the individual lecturer who actively sought out Indigenous content. In other instances, academic staff cited disinterest from the student body. So this was in the case of that design, architecture and building, where students are qualifying to become builders, but more on a, you know, high-end industry construction stuff. And they're very much less inclined to be thinking about issues around native title or even reconceptualizing ideas about property. They're there to make money out of property. They've got a fairly clear idea about that. Other colleagues emphasized anxiety that I've already alluded to, and confidently bringing material into the classroom, and limited scope to assess Indigenous-related content, and shortage of quality resources and curriculum building guides. I'll just wind up. It was a really interesting exercise. I think it was those case studies. I think what I've presented here is really an overview. The real juicy detail is in those actual examples, and we'll hope to build up a series of case studies that will kind of, you know, put some flesh on what I've suggested here. But I for one am very interested in thinking about, in the big subjects where you've got thousands of students enrolled, how they are being exposed to Indigenous stuff, if you like, you know, content, material, perspectives, whether that be in terms of thinking about the classroom environment, or in terms of disciplinary knowledge, and in terms of professional practice. That exposure to large numbers of students, I think, is really important, and I think I've been kind of heartened to see that there actually are a lot of subjects in the social sciences, of more generally, but there's potential to develop it further.